All right, boys, just listen up for a sec. Can you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound make you feel? Give me some adjectives.
It's nice. It's kind of like reassuring. Steady.
That sounds like a very accurate kind of... I really like the sound of that mechanism.
It's very precise, isn't it?
Yeah. It also makes me feel like I should be somewhere that I'm not. Like I'm in a rush or something.
What have
I
forgotten?
Kind of running late. But it does sound very nice.
I think all of that is very valid, boys. But let me tell you, this is the sound of a British-designed mechanical timepiece from the talented team at Marlowe Watch Company, sponsors of this episode. And with Marlowe, each collection is influenced by a historical story of inspiring human endeavour. Now, I've spent some time at their HQ recently because, well, I'm curious about mechanical timekeeping and also how things work. And I can tell you that there is so much very pleasing attention to detail that goes into each and every watch design. Now, these guys are serious about their watches, and you can tell by looking at some of the watch reviews online. I mean, the words quality and value come up time and again. Visit marlowewatchcompany.com to see for yourself. Marlowe Watch Company, time well spent, which I also like to think could be said for this podcast.
No one ever calls me.
Who calls anyone? Lord Sugar's about the only person who calls me.
What does he call you?
Yes, many things.
The world's complexity has just continued to increase exponentially. We're interacting with so much every day, and yet our brains are still at the size of the Neolithic farming communities or the Roman armies, right?
This week, we're going to cover Jono's sketch that explains something called Dunbar's number. The typical number of people we can keep track of and consider part of our ongoing social network. And according to anthropologist Robin Dunbar, this number sits at 150.
And she was like, for a social person, you are really antisocial.
Hello and welcome to Sketchplanations, the podcast. We're back for another series. The doors are open once more. If you're a regular, come on in. How have you been? Here, have another stamp on your loyalty card. Yeah, the weather has turned a little lately, hasn't it? Well, look, you know where everything is. I'll let you get on. And if you're new here, then, well, welcome, firstly. Feel free to have a little look around, and I'll be right here if you need anything or if you have any questions. I should say, actually, that everything we have in stock is out on display, but we do get a new delivery every Thursday. What's that, sorry? What kind of shop is this? Maybe think of it as a curious little emporium of miscellany. Niche? Yeah, I guess it is a little bit, yeah. How long, what, sorry? How long can I keep this metaphor going? Well, that's probably enough now, isn't it, really? No need to flog a dead horse. Oh, only just to add that I'm Rob Bell, shopkeeper. Over there with his calculator and logbook is the manager and owner, John O'Hay. And along any minute now should be... Yeah, here he comes. It's our earnest, inquisitive intern. It's Tom Pellerow. Good evening, my friends. How are you?
Very good.
Hello.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, hello, hello. People will genuinely wonder if they're missing like a track. It was so convincing. They're like, am I supposed to be hearing something? Very impressive. Have you ever done one of those fake conversations on a phone? Yeah. In TV or something. I always wonder if they're doing it on a film. Is there somebody at the other end saying the answers?
Definitely not.
Do you know when I do that sometimes? Is when I see someone coming towards me in the street who I don't necessarily want to talk to. Out comes the phone. Fake conversation.
Oh, hello, mate.
You've blown that now, Rob.
What's that? Yeah. He's never talking to anyone.
No one ever calls me.
No. Who calls anyone? Lord Sugar's about the only person who calls me.
What does he call you?
Yes, many things as well. If I don't answer, I'll call back immediately and immediately again.
From that intro, though, which is something I genuinely don't know about either of you, have either of you ever worked in a shop?
Worked in a cafe.
Have you? Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that counts, kind of retail space, high street retail space. When was that? How old were you?
Gosh, it was a long time ago. I don't know, 17? 18, maybe? Probably 17 or 16 or something, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
It was all right, actually, yeah. Actually, I think I learned a little bit from a summer of... we had sandwiches and coffee, so I pressed buttons on the coffee machine, but I didn't drink any coffee, so I had no idea if it was any good. And
was this before the coffee revolution, so there's only white coffee or black coffee?
I mean, there were more buttons, but most people, you know, didn't get used very much. But we made sandwiches. I remember I used to get to keep all the sandwiches that we didn't eat that day. So I thought it was great. Because, you know, if you finish at 9:30 at night and then eat four sandwiches just because they're free. Yeah, probably not the smartest.
Tommy?
I worked in pubs. Did a lot of working in pubs, even at the uni bar. I worked there. That was always great fun. I really enjoyed working in a pub, working in a bar, chatting to people, taking their orders. Yeah, in the final year, actually, that. Weirdly. Used to really enjoy that. And it's just nice serving people, saying hello to people, and also having something to do. I quite enjoyed that part too.
I haven't.
You're not? I've never worked in a shop. Buffalo Grills.
The Buffalo Grill, yeah. That's a restaurant. It's less a kind of a... I guess so. I mean, that was... I had to dress up like a cowboy, basically. Awful.
And look good.
It's popular.
Awful. But I think I'd quite enjoy working in a shop or a cafe environment. Like you say, the kind of the social side of it, chatting with everybody. I'd want to make sure the counter and everything was very neatly and exactingly presented. I'd enjoy that, I think.
Where do you stand on chatting with people at the checkout in the supermarket?
I enjoy it. Yeah.
A little conversation.
I don't want to hold up proceedings for anyone behind. Yeah, I'm very conscious of that. But I'm very aware of that. But I like to, you know, acknowledge there's a person there. Let's have a chat.
Yeah, brighten their day.
I find when you come back from America, if you've been over in America for whatever reason and you come back to the UK, I'm always really chatty to people, you know, behind the till or behind the counter or whatever.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, you just get looked at a bit weird. What's wrong with this guy?
John, was it you saying your dad has this sort of mini mission that he always tries to make someone smile whenever he has like insane sprees? Does he still do that?
That's a very good memory, yeah. Yeah, no, he will still do that if he's at the checkout at the supermarket. His little thing is see if he can make the checkout person smile.
I like that.
Maybe cheer up the day.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's a bit embarrassing to be next to him sometimes.
Yeah, imagine being his son. It's probably a bit embarrassing.
I mean, I just quietly pack up the shopping, pretend I'm on a phone call.
It's not my dad.
And walk off, just leave him. I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah. Some old guy. Hi, Dad. Welcome to season two.
Yeah. Hi, Tony. I mean, I totally appreciate there's more to it than just the, you know, the niceties. Well, a mutual friend of ours, Philly, sent me a photo on WhatsApp the other day of a place that he was visiting, a retail space in this little town in Colorado up in the mountains where he's spent a bit of time with his family over the summer. And it was a place called the Double Shot Cyclery. So it's a bike shop come coffee shop by day, but it's a kind of speakeasy bar by night. I thought, oh, that sounds like exactly the kind of place I'd love to own and run.
I mean, in a way, it's sort of a shame that I was thinking that a lot of commercial properties are just sort of a bit wasted. I remember thinking of the school, you know, like it's really busy till like 4 o'clock and then empty, this massive building. And if you could have more multiple use properties like that, make a lot more use of all this real estate.
Right, sure.
Maybe it's a bit tricky, run a restaurant in a school.
Who ordered the mash?
school restaurant, school dinner restaurant.
I mean, Tommy, you run a brand now. Would you ever have aspirations of having your like flagship brand store?
That would be amazing. And some of the mega brands that I, you know, would dream of being, you know, the Dysons, the Apples, and many in between have a flagship store somewhere. And I remember speaking to a brand who I knew did have one who were pretty small, and the amount of money they were losing from having this store was like...
They're mostly lost leaders. They are lost leaders, aren't they?
Hundreds of thousands, like a month they were losing from having this store. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, we've got to be ginormously big to be able to even consider that, but maybe one day. But
I can picture it. I can picture you swanning around in there, saying hi. Yeah, that's me. Yeah,
standing next to the cardboard cutter.
Yes, Jono. Yes.
I do think that probably everyone should work in retail of some form when they're relatively young, just to appreciate it. And probably everyone should also work in a call center just to appreciate the challenge of doing it. It's like, we used to do national service. It's almost we should go and do certain things just to improve our kind of understanding
appreciation,
and that sort of stuff. So, and certainly when we look to employ people, we do very much look at what other work they've done. Have they worked in bars, restaurants, shops? Because it's hard work, and you know it's an important graft that you have to do, especially when you're young, I think.
Well, look, this is the start of a new series. We won't dwell on that too much, but I'm excited about where this series might take us. The things we might talk about, we haven't completely finalised which sketches we're going to talk about yet, but
I've got a few.
It's good, you know, with a new series, there's a new opportunity to, you know, switch things up, bring in some new signings, give the squad a bit of a boost. I mean, we're going to keep everything pretty much exactly the same, but
it's like, hang on,
we'll switch out the other two people.
At least we're recognising there's an opportunity to do that. And the fresh start effect comes to mind. Episode 5 from last series. Anything we can take from that, maybe?
No mumbling. That's what I'm going to take.
Is it?
Yeah.
Do you think you mumble a bit?
Apologies if I mumbled. Sorry. Shan't mumble anymore. It's my fresh start.
All right. For anyone coming to us for the first time, just to set out the lay of the land, in this podcast, we'll be bringing you a series of, let's call them medium depth conversations about a whole host of different topics, guided by the wonderful collection of sketches that explain stuff from the world around us, created by our very own John O'Hay. And they can all be found at sketchplanations.com. And one thing we all really enjoyed from the first series was hearing from you, our listeners, with your comments and stories and examples of the things we've talked about. And we want to encourage even more of that going forward. And the best way to get in touch with us is via email. Tommy, over to you.
At hello. I've messed that up because I said the at the beginning.
Tommy, how can people get in touch with us? Where would they send their emails?
hello@sketchplanations.com.
We'll be going through the postbag of your messages, emails and comments at the very end of the episode. Well, I've just done a quick check and I'm happy to report that our business rates have been paid for the month. Nobody has any time off booked in, and our Listen to One Episode Get 15 Free special offer has been a roaring success. The conditions are perfect. Let's seize the day. Let's podcast. This week, we're going to cover Jono's sketch that explains something called Dunbar's number. The typical number of people we can keep track of and consider part of our ongoing social network. And according to anthropologist Robin Dunbar, this number sits at 150. Righty-ho, Jono, it's time to shine, may I say, your particularly bright light once again. Talk us through Dunbar's number. Where did you dig up this little gem?
You know, I was wondering that myself because I've known about it for a very long time, and I remembered that where I first came upon it was Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, which I read, it came out in 2000, but I must have read it like 2002, 2003 or something like that. And he gave this example of the company that makes Gore-Tex,
Gore DuPont. And Associates. I'm talking to Alex. I'm going to shut up. It's not DuPont. You just cut me out of that. I was trying to work out where I'd remembered it from, and it's that book, isn't it? Yes.
It is, yeah. So, W.L. Gore and Associates. And so they apparently discovered that they would build buildings, company buildings, that fit 150 people. And beyond 150 people, they discovered that various social problems would happen. And so rather than make a bigger building than 150, they would, once that was full, they'd just make another building to fit 150. And so obviously that was where I was introduced to it. But, you know, reading a bit more about it, you know, I think about it, it's the typical number of people we can keep track of and consider part of our ongoing social network. And there's actually different scales of them. And what I tried to show in the sketch, I think I drew 150.
Did you?
Heads.
I didn't stop and count them, but it's a lovely sketch. I love how you've done it.
As I was trying to do this, and I was making fun of it a bit, like in the sense that if you've got one person beyond 150, you've no idea who they are.
Yeah.
Was the idea. But there's actually different degrees, and so you have like a smaller number of very close friends, around five, something called your super family. They're different names, or your clan. I think around 15. Sorry, the clan is, and then the clan is 50, and then a tribe is 150, and so you have these different sort of groups. But about 150 was about the number of people that we can just generally keep track of, was the idea.
So yeah, that's interesting, because this, so it's Robin Dunbar who I think might have first proposed this officially through some research, and I think research with others, but I think it has been interpreted and poked about quite a bit by other social scientists and anthropologists. So those numbers come up again and again, but the terminology that I'd seen was 5 loved ones, 15 good friends, 50 friends, and 150 meaningful contacts. So yeah, I guess that would fit in with the nomenclature you were using, Jono.
Exactly.
Tribe at the end, that's quite cool.
Yeah, I think there's a few different ones. And I think Robin Dunbar was an evolutionary psychologist, and I think it came from, he was studying all sorts of different groups through history, but also for example, primate communities and early humans, so like Neolithic farming communities. And so this number 150 comes up quite a lot, including in like the basic size of a unit of the Roman army.
Yeah.
And also, you know, to this day, it's kind of interesting to think. And so I think he actually sort of calculated this. It's come to be 150, but based on the size of, I think it was the neocortex. So different primate groups would have different sized brains and then actually live in different sized social groups, which I think is really interesting.
So then I've also seen that, and I don't know if this was part of Dunbar's research or others who've added to it, but it kind of goes on from 150 to 500, what I've seen referred to as acquaintances, and then 1500 people you'd recognize.
Gosh.
Roughly for humans is what's been proposed.
I wonder how you test that. It's just quite fascinating, isn't it?
I wonder what the deviation is on that, though, as it were, because I feel like some people know a lot more people and like having lots of friends, and other people like having more closer friends. So I imagine there's quite a deviation. Maybe that's the that's the medium, as it were.
So this is the beautiful thing, right? So as I understand it, this research was done initially on non-human primates, as Jono was saying, associating the size of the neocortex, or the size of the part of the brain that, you know, deals with thought and language, to the size of their communities that they managed. And it was done quite a bit through observing behaviors like grooming as a significant other being in that society. But then when it's been projected onto human life, we get the kind of things that John was talking about there, historically with Roman armies and like 11th century English villages, all this kind of thing. But there's obviously these are projections, you know. This is just a fun theory more than anything else, I guess, but could be used effectively in things like business and society, I guess.
I like the way Dunbar mentioned about informally, the number is the number of people you wouldn't feel embarrassed about joining uninvited for a drink if you happen to bump into them in a bar.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
So you know them well enough to do that. That you're
150. Like, whereas if it was one of your 500 acquaintances, you might go, oh.
You'd probably get on the phone, wouldn't you? it's the phone's ringing.
Do you know another one, interesting one that I've seen it kind of related to that 150 is the size of your Christmas card list when you used to write Christmas cards. Like my mum still writes Christmas cards, and I reckon her Christmas card list is probably around that. I should probably ask her.
That's a good point, My parents, they work for weeks on their, on their Christmas cards.
Yeah.
It's this major operation. maybe it's around 150, I don't know.
But Tommy, you pick up on a really good point there, that there are outliers and there will be huge variance within this, and it will vary with different cultures as well as individuals as well.
That's a really good point, in cultures and that. And I wonder how social media and the ability to communicate has massively affected this.
Yeah, Hugely. And so it's very different. So, I mean, with if you look at the difference between introverts and extroverts, I mean, you could, it's probably not too far a leap to say that most extroverts probably have a larger number of maybe slightly shallower relationships with people, and introverts probably have a smaller number of deeper relationships.
Yes.
I think the research also showed that women tend to have slightly more contacts within the closer layers than men.
Yeah.
But again, it depends where you're looking, I guess.
The thing I was trying to work out is the people who work for me or I work, like, is this a personal or a business context, if you know what I mean?
Well, as Jono pointed out, with the, who was it? What was the company? Who
Gore-Tex.
Split themselves up into? Gore-Tex. Who make Gore-Tex.
Yeah.
And I've read that the Swedish tax authorities have done that as well. Split themselves into offices, physical offices of 150. So what kind of problems are we looking at? Or what kind of challenges are we looking at when it gets over and above 150? I guess communication is a key one.
Yeah, well, as I said, it was about, like, within 150, you can have a relatively cohesive group and keep track of everybody. And it's, and I think you can, you like, obviously we've, as a race, we can function many times beyond that. But to do that, you need to start bringing in, like, norms and maybe rules or laws. And so, like, if you're creating an online community, you start to have, well, this is how you behave on here. You can't do this, or you get banned if you, you know, go do these actions. But you don't necessarily need that at smaller group sizes. But you can, we can obviously function much bigger than that. But beyond that, you need to start having some rules. But it's funny. I mean, it's funny to think. It's funny, isn't it, to think of, like, do you have rules between your close friends or your larger family? Of course you don't, right? You don't need them. But maybe you do when your company gets to that size. Or I don't know, if you're organising 150 people to go to a festival. Definitely think, like, technology has a huge amount to play in this, and it must be just changing it, because it was about brain size, right? Wasn't it? It was about, like, what can we cope with in our brain? And I feel like I worked with somebody and he had a really very sensible observation that, you know, like, the world's complexity has just continued to increase exponentially.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, there's so much going on now. We're interacting with so much every day, and yet our brains have not, and our brains are still at the size of the Neolithic farming communities or the Roman armies, right? But yet there's so much more going on, and so actually it's just really difficult for us to keep up with this massive complexity that we introducing in our world.
Yeah, agreed. It's a good point.
Somehow we
it's
do.
Very good point.
Somehow, like, because the people on social media have 50 million followers, and somehow they manage to sort of communicate with them. Is that their tribe is that many? Like Taylor Swift, she'd probably regard her tribe as those 50 million followers.
I don't think it's very two-way there, is it?
Potentially agree.
Yeah. I feel like you're more broadcasting when you're at that level.
Yeah. But it is interesting because, Tommy, you raised, you know, what's the effect of social media on this? Earlier, and you know, if you've got followers, it's very different. It's a very different kind of conversation. It's a very different relationship that you have with them.
I remember when I learned about this round about the time that Facebook was coming out, and it does do some interesting things, because your network at any one time, if you go back to your network at school, your network at university, and your network at your job, naturally sort of change the people who you are maintaining relationships and spending time. But Facebook does this funny thing of, like, resurfacing these really old connections and potentially putting them right at the top above the people that you're seeing on a regular basis, you know, week on week. And I don't know if that has potential to expand the number or not. I don't know. I mean, we have a limited amount of time that we can spend and actually interact with, but, you know, by, I don't know, things like Strava, right? Like you do a run and it goes up on Strava and somebody else sees it who's from a quite a long way back in your history. Maybe that expands our number.
I guess it's then about how meaningful you interpret that interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, again, coming back to some research, It was found that younger generations...
You need to work on your citations, Robert.
I really do. I'm so sorry, anybody whose work I am badly quoting or paraphrasing. But research does show that younger generations associate more meaning to online relationships, and so, I guess some even purely online relationships, to older generations. Because, and I guess you could read into that, that for a lot of younger generations, life without the internet and without social media has never existed for them. So while the number, whilst the number might increase and the potential for that number to increase, what depth, what level are those interactions and relationships at?
Around this time, I was also reading, I remember reading some really interesting research about the likelihood of collaboration within companies, or it wasn't just companies, it was also like academic institutions like universities, and they did it by distance. So they were like, okay, what's the likelihood of collaborating if you're in the same office, the likelihood of collaborating if you're on the same floor, likelihood if you're in a same building but different floor, and the likelihood if you're in a different building. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the striking thing was it just dropped off like boom. Like, you know, the chances of you collaborating with the person in a different building to you, even if the building was right next door, was might as well have been in a different country.
Wow.
And I was thinking about that research again recently, because I was thinking it's probably changed, like with all of the tools that we have, and how common it is to be able to work remotely, and how well connected you are with people who are not in the same location, but you're seeing them and meeting them and chatting with them every day. Yes. And also the tools you have, like even down to like emojis and things like that, to make a bit more of a connection than a formal email back and forth. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, now you can send voice memos and video notes and all that. And I just think that's massively changed. But I remember thinking that was, that research at the time was really fascinating to me. It's like, if you're on, even if you're on the floor below, you might as well not be in the same institution, you know.
Wow.
Like you're not going to collaborate. But that's probably changing, I think.
Yeah, because so much develops so quickly for companies in remote working.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I didn't actually check the size, but I think weddings are sort of interesting. I mean, there's a lot of rules around weddings about who you invite and who you don't invite. And it gets quite difficult, doesn't it? It's when you're like, oh, well, we've only got 50 chairs, so... You know,
it's not the chairs come to it, Jenna. Let's, there's a price tag on each of those chairs. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, there is. But I remember somebody in my lab at Berkeley was making some really cool software to visualize networks. I don't know if you remember, but I took everybody on the guest list and put, I thought it'd be interesting to know, well, actually at a wedding, you know, it just looks like loads of people sat around loads of tables, but it'd be interesting to see at what parts of your life these people came from.
Yeah.
And they did, and we did like this sort of cluster diagram and printed it out and put it on the wall, which is very, thinking back, is very unusual thing to do at a wedding. But it was quite interesting. You had, I had, you know, some school friends, university friends, family friends, and family. And sometimes the family had connections with some of the friends and some didn't. But I do remember having two people who came, who, when you drew out this network, everybody was like all these clusters, and then there were these two people off of the side, and I had to like tuck them in.
Find a way.
Are they the guys on the sketch? The guy over on the right hand side. Going,
who invited him? I can't remember.
No, but I think it's very natural for people, as you said, Tommy, for different people at different stages in our lives to kind of migrate between those different groups both ways, depending on, you know, factors, depending on situations. So I went through my contacts in my mobile phone. Yeah. And I counted them. And, you know, this is built up over, you know, when you get a new phone, it just kind of continues on.
The votes are in. How many did you get? You
took out the plumbers.
So there were 852.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Right. There were a couple.
How many were called Tom? Like, I've got hundreds that are just like Tom or
No, I tend to put a bit more in than that. Some of them didn't have surnames, but were a description of,
amazing.
of what that was. There were at least 100 probably 150 within there whose names I didn't even recognize anymore. So that would bring me down to like
650.
Let's say like 600.
Yeah.
So I reckon that you would probably think then of the people in your contacts list on your phone is all your loved ones, your friends, your good friends, the people you want to maintain a friendship with. But it probably is your acquaintances, like, right, about like around the 500 mark.
Yeah.
People you've done some business with, maybe.
A few plumbers.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you feel about, you know, of those, let's say 500 people, would you have, if you came across them in a bar unexpectedly, would you join them for a drink? Would you feel comfortable?
No, because that's the acquaintances. I think that matches with what we were saying earlier. But if you were to look at the top 150 within there, I probably would. Yeah. And interestingly, and I know that I haven't updated this for about maybe 3 or 4 years, but, you know, you can favourite certain contacts, so they're always at the top. I counted those up. 15.
We're either John or
go check their phone. Check your phone.
It's personal. Sensitive. John O was, but Tom wasn't. That's painful.
Bit awkward. No, of course you were.
I've got 15 exactly.
Have you as well?
Yeah.
Tommy, count
I
up
I think it's because you're only allowed 15 favourites, right? Because there's a limit on the number of favourites you can have.
Johnny, are you serious?
I'm serious.
That's amazing. It's not amazing. It's just interesting. It's fun. Let's call it that. Tommy doesn't favourite anyone because he's the least social person. He's the most anti-social person.
He's the favourites bit. I've got seven and two of them are my work.
I always like this idea for company stuff. I like this idea of, was it two pizza teams? Are you familiar with that, Tom?
Yeah.
What's a two pizza team?
So it's basically if you want to get a team to work on something, don't get the team size bigger than if you were going to have an evening social. It can be fed with two pizzas.
So two people.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, Tommy.
Rob's like, I can do one pizza.
And if there are leftovers of someone else's, yeah, mate, I am in there.
Quite like cold pizza.
I'm on my own.
I am for this brainstorm.
Again.
Yes.
I'll take two pizzas,
really,
please.
Full and pretty disgusted with myself. Again.
This is why Rob's freelance. Can't join any teams. Eats all the pizza.
So a two pizza team. So, I mean, if you're looking at that for people who aren't gluttonous, what are you looking at? Like, I guess six, seven, eight people.
Yeah, maybe a little bit less. I think there's a size where, you know, very very small teams, you don't have to coordinate very much, and as you get the team bigger, you have to waste more time on coordinating the people in the team.
Yeah,
and there was a really nice concept I heard of not too long ago. Seth Godin introduced it, which is a handshake overhead, which is also a thing in technology, I think, which is just like literally every person you meet requires a little bit of time and a little bit of attention to, you know, say hello and meet them and remember who they are and all that stuff. And whereas if you've got small enough teams, your handshake overhead is really small.
Yeah.
Yes. Are you wary of this, Tommy? And it's, I know with the size of your company, we're not at the 150 level, but are you wary of the size of the company and thus the additional functions that you might have to bring in to manage that population?
It makes a big difference, and often you start with, you know, less than five and you get to five. And I know a lot of founders who kind of hark back to those days when there were 5 or 15 of them with kind of really fond memories, because everyone knew each other really well. It was really easy to get stuff done. There wasn't that massive handshake, because the more people you have, the more HR you need, the more events you need, the more communication, the more you spend your life communicating rather than doing stuff. I think about it a lot, and we've yo-yoed up and down, and the difference in structures that we have as a larger team is really quite significant. And personally, having grown up in small companies, that was quite challenging for me, I must admit.
What was challenging? To start to grow and think about
having the
not
systems
being a smaller company
in place and actually even realizing that they were necessary. You know, firstly, that unconscious incompetence We must do a sketch explanation of that one if we haven't done it. The conscious incompetence, you know, the four different squares.
Not a very pretty sketch, but there is one. The conscious competence framework.
Yeah. Probably a tricky matrix. Sketch.
Yeah.
Just a matrix.
Yeah, did a long time ago. So if we're going to talk about it, we should probably at least explain what it is.
Save it for another day. You've got listeners, you've got to listen to another episode to hear that one.
Okay.
I was going to round this off by asking if there's any other business to bring in on Dunbar's number that you'd thought of wanting to bring to the table. And I'll start it off. In looking at this and looking at, as I was saying earlier, this number might be quite different between cultures and different societies, different parts of the world. I saw the acronym WEIRD, a weird society, WEIRD, which stood for Western, Educated, Industrialized, Rich and Democratic.
Mm.
And it had been proposed that perhaps Dunbar's number applied mostly to weird societies. But I hadn't seen that acronym before.
Yeah.
Weird. Have you heard of that? Have you seen that?
Yeah. It's very much like that's everyone we know, right?
Right, yeah.
I'm currently reading book about geopolitics, and it's talking me through the history of Saudi Arabia, the history of Pakistan, the history of like these places that we didn't learn any history of those places at school, right? So we had no kind of understanding, and they're very different culturally, religiously, their beliefs, and I think we often really underestimate how all of our thoughts and being is that democracy is great and is the only way forward, and that, you know, and the rich development, and everyone wants to be like us, and that's not the case.
That's why travel's so valuable.
Agree.
If you can.
Anything more on Dunbar's number?
I think I'd like to say that this was based on some science on the size of a certain part of our brain, right? So I think it is quite a kind of almost like certain aspects of physics and gravity. It's potentially actually constrained around something. Maybe the pressure is on that we should know lots of people, we should have really, but I've found it quite reassuring. You don't have to be kind of trying to be best buddy with hundreds of people, because probably your brain won't be able to handle it.
I think that's a good point. I think I quite enjoyed that factor as well. This is a kind of physiological limitation on this and the complexity that our brains can handle.
And so
I like that.
When you start a new class or a new job, there's going to be loads and loads of people, and it'll be really quite mentally taxing at the beginning until you kind of find your group within that potentially.
I think there's a few times in your life that are quite precious in a way where you're really open to new connections.
If
I think of those times, like when I moved to the US and when I went to university in particular, and to some degree when I moved back to the UK, it's very conscious that you're just like, there's just a couple of people around here that you know, so it's going to be a weird life if you just have those couple of people.
Yeah,
like let's go meet some people, let's go build my circle.
But then it gets to a point and your brain goes, that'll do, mate.
Yeah, my parents have lived in a number of different places. And maybe that's the problem with their Christmas card list.
They've got 150 in four different places.
In all these countries are.
Yeah.
I need a spreadsheet to keep track.
Or we just need a bit of a purge every now and then, maybe, you know, a bit of a spring clean. Well, the end of our exploration of Dunbar's number signifies closing time for this episode. Please make your way to the till imminently to make your purchases. £25, thank you very much. That's £3.87 change. There you go. Have a great day and be sure to come back soon. Next week, we'll be back talking about the four pillars of too much. Too much what, I hear you ask? Tune in to find out. For now, thanks very much for listening. Go well and stay well. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
See you later. All music on this podcast series is sourced from the very talented Frank Cinelli. And you can find loads more tracks at frankcinelli.com.